Blog Talk Radio.
There's a little song that we sing in our movement down in the South. I don't know if you've heard it, but it has become the theme song. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. No, I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it. We shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory's won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory's won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory's won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some would be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the
us this information. They have us standing around sometimes and pointing at the brothers and saying, yeah, that's them over there. They ain't no good. They doing this and that and the other, and it's all negative. And they have us thinking that the black man is going to die and we going to live on. But that's not how it's going to go. There is still one monolith in the black community, and that's that it still takes a man and a woman to make a baby. So if the black man dies, we all die. And I don't want to die. I want to live. I want my children and my grandchildren and whatever else is coming after Charizard, I want that to live. But we are not on the path of life. We're on the path of destruction. You know, learning how to get along has to be taught by force. Slavery was taught by force. We didn't volunteer for that. They made us do that. They forced us to do that. And that's how we're going to have to learn how to reunify. It's going to have to be done by force. We kind of have to make ourselves try to deal with each other. Yeah, and that's very difficult, and it certainly takes a great deal of self-control and love for your nation at large. It's the greatest form of unselfishness. Now, I don't go around advocating that people that hate each other stay together. That's not what I'm saying. That's different. We can't solve a problem or get to a solution about a problem that we refuse to acknowledge that we have. We don't have to be ashamed that we have a problem. We don't have to be ashamed to know that it is related to slavery, because all of our problems are related to slavery. And I know that that seems to be some old hat issue, and everybody want me to stop talking about that. Nobody would tell the Japanese woman to forget about the fact that during World War II, the white man interned her family, took all of their personal possessions. Nobody would tell her to forget about that. Nobody would tell the Indian woman, forget about the fact that the white man came over here and took your country and put you and your babies out on the reservation. And nobody would dare to tell the Jewish woman to forget about the Holocaust, so why I gotta forget about slavery? See, the Japanese and the Indian and the Jewish woman got behind their men, and they had some very terrible histories also. But because they got behind their men and supported them and worked with them, those people are successful today. They own property. They have businesses. They got great land here and abroad. You know, they have stocks, bonds, whatever America has to offer. They own part of that. They are in a position to make decisions because they have some ownership. It's only been the black man and the black woman who didn't reunite after a terrible time. And so today we are splintered. We don't have very much. We practice envy and jealousy. You know, they taught us a lot of bad habits that we practice against each other. If we practice everything we practice against each other, against the white man, they'd have been killed out of America. Most of that stuff we reserve for our own kind. And that's wrong. We have had that rumor that we are the backbone of the black nation because it has served to make us think we were better than the black man. We have walked around and wore that as some kind of a sacred garment. And our men have had to struggle up under the already preconceived notion that they wasn't no good. We have always heard that the black man leaves us. He walks out on us. He don't love his children. He won't take care of his family. He beat his women. He do a lot of horrible things. This book goes back to try to examine what are some of the possible contributing causes. What happened before he left? What happened? Something happened. The black man is just not bad by nature. The brothers love their children as much as any other man. Every man loves his baby. They keep wanting to tell us that our man don't even love his children. He's not a mother, though. He's a father. He's not going to have the same kind of connection to the cubs that we have. We can't expect that. We keep wanting the man to act like a woman. He can't act like no woman. Praise be to Allah. I wrote the book so that the brothers would understand what's going on, because most of what we charge them with is that he can't, quote, handle us. He can't handle me. They haven't known what they were handling. They didn't have that affirmation. The book is really a book that puts the black man on point, because it tells him what he is allowed to happen to his woman and his children. And he can never again say,
but if not, there was a day when many of the Israelites found themselves in bondage in Babylon. And there was a king of Babylon by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. You read about him a good deal in the book of Daniel, and it stands as an epic that will remain stenciled on the mental sheets of unfolding generations. Nebuchadnezzar was a mighty king. And when he ruled, he ruled. And when he issued an order, he meant business. And Nebuchadnezzar issued an order. He made a golden image, and his order was that everybody under the reign of his kingship had to bow before that golden image and worship it. Now, those of you who read the Bible remember that story. One day Nebuchadnezzar called
Revelation 22, 1, 2, verse 23. Now, when you get ready, there's a number there. That number means something. And that number will open up. If 44 years and the years of 21, the years of 6, man is 66. Not the devil, the healing of our ancestors.
And the angels can even have the women from China.